Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another live broadcast of Moving Forward here on YaisenRadio.com. Today is March 16th, 2014. Man, you know what? A quarter of this year is already over. Well, not a quarter. Well, a quarter in the business world. I mean, we're actually halfway through the third month of this year already. Today is March 16th, and I'm broadcasting live from the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. I'm actually made it back. It's so funny. Every week, I'm on the road, and it's so funny. It's like half of my show I do on Thursday nights on the road somewhere, and then it looks like on Sunday nights, I'm back into the home studio, you know, here in Atlanta. So, I hope everybody had a good week. You know, I've been excited and ready for tonight's show. And plus, I hope everybody had a good weekend also. You know, tomorrow's Monday morning. Time to get back to work, get back to school, you know, get back into the routine of everything. So, before we get into tonight's show, I must go ahead and update you on a couple of things that's in the news right now. And, of course, like, what's been like 9 days now, they're still looking for the plane, the missing airplane. There's no signs of where this plane is because the plane had landed. Some are saying that the plane exploded. Some say the plane's in the bottom of the ocean. It's just so many different scenarios and so many different conspiracy theories behind flight 370. The question is, where is flight 370? That has like been the mystery of the year. You know, just think about an airplane that big just disappears, just like poof, gone. So once again, my prayers go out to the family members of the people who was on that plane. And it's so funny, you know, stranger things that happen. Wouldn't it be funny or crazy if the plane pops up and everybody's healthy? You know, it didn't actually crash, but, you know, that's some wishful thinking. But anyway, I'm going to tell you guys something that's funny. This show, almost didn't go down tonight. For some reason, when we produced this show or whatever, for some reason, it didn't come up on the server. And the show actually said it wasn't scheduled for tonight. And so we were scrambling in the studio to the very last minute to make sure that we make sure we give you guys a live broadcast here of YizerRadio.com. Okay, I feel like I'm doing a lot of rambling. So we're going to get into tonight's topic. Tonight's topic, we are going to talk about something that's been going on for at least the past, I mean, publicly, just in the media, at least the past 25, 30 years, okay? Then it's been in the news a lot lately, also because of our man, Spike Lee. And we're going to talk about gentrification, okay? We're going to talk about gentrification tonight because everywhere around this country, all the areas that used to be known as black neighborhoods or urban neighborhoods or whatever, all have been getting a facelift. And there's been this great debate out there as in, is gentrification good? Is it bad? Is it a part of racism? You know, so we're going to get into all of this tonight, you know. And then I'm going to give you guys my perspective on it also because I have been aware of this for a while now. And then I'm also a victim of it. I ain't going to say a victim of it. I'm going to say I have experienced some type of gentrification because I'm never going to play the victim, okay? So we're going to get into that tonight. So I'm going to take a break. And this is your man, Dwayne Abernathy. You listen to Move Report here on YizerRadio.com.
Filthy when that liquor get up on me. I've been thinking, I've been thinking. Why can't I keep my fingers off it, baby? I want you, na-na. Why can't I keep my fingers off it, baby? I want you, na-na. Cigars on ice, cigars on ice. Feeling like an animal with these cameras all in my grill. Flashing lights, flashing lights. You got me pity, 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 baby. I want you, na-na. Can't keep your eyes off my pity, daddy. I want you, na-na. Drunk in love. I want you. We woke up in the kitchen saying hi.
Hello, this is Dwayne Abernathy with 14 Generation Technical Services. In today's world, businesses need a video surveillance camera system. Some of the benefits of installing a camera system are they will improve safety, reduce shrinkage, reduce accidents, increase your bottom line, raise staff accountability, and give your customers a sense of peace. Here at 14 Generations, we specialize in new state-of-the-art technology cloud surveillance systems for restaurants, retail, lodging, offices, and we specialize in daycare centers. In addition to sales, we offer service, maintenance, training, and installation of these customized video surveillance systems. If you would like more information, please contact us at 888-751-8881. Once again, that's 888-751-8881, or log on to 14generations.com. That's the number 14 in the word generations. So once again, that's 14generations.com.
This show is sponsored by damselindistress.com. If you're in Atlanta, Georgia, or Indianapolis, Indiana, and need home or business services like junk hauling, moving, carpet cleaning, residential or commercial cleaning, electrical, painting, drywall, or a handyman to complete your to-do list, then let damselindistress.com be your helping hand. Call 1-888-769-2210 or log on to damselindistress.com and use promo code YIZER to receive a 5% discount on your services. That's 1-888-769-2210 or log on to damselindistress.com and use promo code YIZER to receive a 5% discount on your services.
He almost knocked me down, man. The word is excuse me.
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Not only did he knock me down, he's talking about my brand new white Air Jordans that I just bought. And that's all you can say is excuse me.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm serious. I fucked you up quick two times. Who told you to step on my sneakers? Who told you to walk on my side of the block? Who told you to be in my neighborhood?
I own this brownstone.
Who told you to buy a brownstone on my block, in my neighborhood, on my side of the street? Yo, what you want to live in a black neighborhood for anyway, man? Motherfuck gentrification.
Well,
as I understand it, this is a free country. Man can live wherever he wants.
Free country? Man, I should fuck you for saying that stupid shit alone.
What's up? It's your man, Dwayne Abernathy. You listen to Move Forward here on YizerRadar.com. Man, that is one of my all-time favorite movies, Do the Right Thing. Wow. That movie came out 25 years ago by Spike Lee. So, this is the funny thing. I just jumped straight into it. That clip right there was one of the all-time funniest things. And that was the first time I was like 18 when this movie came out. And that's the first time that I was introduced to what gentrification was. And that clip of that movie was so funny because that's like, why you want to live in my neighborhood? Why you want to move in a black neighborhood? And the white boy was like, this America, we're free country, I can move anywhere. And then they go, well, why don't you go back to, at the end of the scene, he's like, why don't you go back to Boston? He's like, I'm from Brooklyn. Because he had on Larry Bird jersey, but you had to watch the movie. Anyway, we are going to get into gentrification. And if you don't know what gentrification is pretty much the redevelopment of rundown areas in most of our cities. Well, I ain't going to say most, in all of the major cities around the country. And the majority of the population in these neighborhoods are African Americans. And the reason why I want to talk about this subject tonight, because one, I'm still trying to understand the fact of, if majority of my people live in these communities or whatever, why or how do they end up being considered so much bad areas or bad neighborhoods or communities with no value? You know, we want to get into what was the cause of this. I mean, just think about it. Anybody in there with any sense of any basic common sense realize that no one wants to live in poverty on purpose. Like, purposely, do you know anybody who purposely want to be unsuccessful or purposely want to live in run down community? But for some reason, in this country, in the media, and also in a lot of these neighborhoods who have experienced gentrification, all feel like these are deserving areas to be considered run down. Or the people who live in these communities a lot of times feel that they don't deserve more. And that to me has got to be some type of psychological, I want to say the word brainwashing, I'm going to be honest with you, because it's just hard for me to believe that all these people in this community just like living in, you know, dilapidated housing. And then that gets to the point where it pisses me off, where I go back to, like, I always talk about the civil rights movement, how, like, if this thing was so great for us, how did it seem like after the 60s we just really just fell apart as a community? And I want to dive into this, and then I want to ask some questions about this. Then I also want to find some answers to this whole gentrification thing. Is it so bad as we say it is in the media in our community? Or is it a good thing for our community? Is it a good thing for these cities? Is there racism behind this? You know, we're going to get into this because a lot of people talk about this subject, but a lot of times a lot of people just complain and gripe about this subject. And I'm going to give you a perfect example. This is what really sparked the conversation lately. This is my man Spike Lee. And this is what Spike Lee had to say about gentrification.
My mother was a visionary. We were the first black family moving to Cobble Hill, Brooklyn. My mother said she got tired of paying rent and she said, let's buy a home. My parents bought our brownstone in Fort Greene in 1969. You know how much? $40,000. You know how much? They wouldn't even, when they listed, they wouldn't even list Fort Greene back. They would say Brooklyn Heights, downtown vicinity. You know how much homes going to Fort Greene? You go to Fort Greene today, it's unrecognizable. Bed-Stuy, Do or Die, Harlem, Lower East Side, D.C.'s not Chocolate City no more. Here's the thing about gentrification. I've said this more. This won't be the first time people might be hearing this. The upside of gentrification, more police presence, better public schools, the garbage can be picked up. But there's a downside. I'm not going to make a generalization, but in many cases, when people move in, they have this Christopher Columbus syndrome, which I talked about in Nelson George's film documentary. There's a great tradition and heritage in Harlem, in Fort Greene and Bed-Stuy. You just can't come in like blowing up the spot, like you've been there forever. My father's a jazz musician, a great jazz musician, Bill Lee, did the scores for She's Gotta Have It, School Days, Do the Right Thing, Mo Better Blues. He's been playing music at his home, at our home, since 1969. Now, some neighbor moved in. They're calling the cops, my father, saying he's playing his music too loud. That's some bullshit. Mount Morris Park in Harlem. For years, these brothers have played African drums on Sunday morning. Now, they're gone. That's disrespectful. And I'm just using my father's example, but no one has ever complained since 1969 about my father playing his jazz music. Now this new person moves in. They're calling the cops. The cops laughed at them. That's Bill Lee. It's all right. My father says, they're lucky they moved next door to hear the music. So it's that type of attitude. And that's not making good neighbors. That's not coming to neighborhood, being humble.
What's up? It's your man, Dwayne Abernathy. You're listening to Moving Forward here on YazzyRadio.com. Today is March 16, 2014, live broadcast from Atlanta, Georgia. Tonight we're talking about gentrification. That was Spike Lee. Ranting and complaining about what's going on in his parents' neighborhood or the neighborhood that he used to live in Brooklyn. A lot of you guys saw in the news lately somebody had vandalized his childhood home and spray painted Do the Right Thing and all this stuff on the wall. Okay. But this is my thing about gentrification and people like Spike Lee. Sitting up there crying and acting like the victim while you're sitting on a lease of $40 to $60 million empire. Might be more than that. I'm sure Spike might be more than that, worth more than that. And my thing is, once again, it goes back to my show I did the other day when I was talking about controlling your community, having your own. And this is what white people do. White people own their stuff, and they control their community. For some reason, we don't do that. We have our community, and we let everybody else dictate what goes on in our community. You know, and then we allow things to go in our community, then we sit there and act like the victims. And I keep telling you guys, the solution to all of this is participating in local government. If you participate in what's going on in your freaking neighborhood, you cannot sit there and act and cry like the freaking victim. And I'm telling you right now, I'm saying this directly to my people because I'm tired of us laying back, sitting around blaming white men and white people for everything and all our woes that goes on in our community. Yes, we did go through slavery. Yes, we went through the Jim Crow laws. Yes, we went to the Civil Rights Movement, but yes, we also let the Civil Rights Movement disperse us as a community. You know, but the thing about it is the fact of, yes, we went through all these things, but we got to be able to grow from these situations. Because when you look around, and once again, I say this all the time, we are a group of people that we have had a horrible, horrible history in this country. Since we have walked on this land, since our first black feet touched down in Virginia, which we was actually here before slavery, but I'm just saying the black, the descendants of slavery, our first generation of slaves in this country, since we touched our feet down in Virginia, we have had a bad ride. But this is the thing about it. We have been here long enough now to group together to fight against a lot of the oppressions that we have in this country. At this point in 2014, it is time to quit acting like the damn victims. We have to stop this. We have to stop it, because if we don't stop it, they're going to continue to take from us. They're going to continue to kill us. The justice system will never work for us. We will never have the economic structure that we need in this country, because why? We keep acting like the victim, and at the same time, we always think that if we do the same thing that white people do, we're going to get the same result, and it doesn't work like that. The Civil Rights Movement proved that. As soon as the Civil Rights Bill was signed, as soon as we all decided we can go shopping outside of our community, guess what? There goes the damn money. And guess what happens when our money went? There goes the value of our neighborhoods and the value of the homes that our grandparents was owning in our neighborhoods. The generation before us, in a way, they pretty much failed us. They weakened us. And I'm being honest, because I have been watching gentrification go on since 1989. Yet also, I live in Atlanta, Georgia. And I tell you guys, when I first came down to Atlanta in 1996, okay, that was the first time where I watched the city, because they're getting prepared for the Olympics, where they just pretty much gathered up all their homeless population at the time and gave them all one-way tickets to get the hell out of town. You got to go. You got to go. Okay? That was the first sign I saw. The next sign I saw, which I didn't know, city of Atlanta was actually one of the first cities in this country to build public housing, like straight up projects, right? Well, when the city's lease was up on all the public housing in Atlanta, they sold all the public housing to private investors, and they went through this city and knocked down every public housing community in the city. And you know what they did with those people? They dispersed all those people out to the suburbs, out to the outside counties, like DeKalb County, Rockdale County, Clayton County, Cobb County. And I'm going to get into this more. I'm going to get into this more tonight, but I'm just letting you know the direction that I'm going with this show tonight, because I'm going to talk about the positives and the negatives of gentrification. And I'm going to let you guys know, like anything else that goes on in this country, a lot of things are not by circumstance or coincidence. Everything that goes on in this country is a plan. There's always a grand plan. But for some reason, we are still stuck on their first grand plan, which of course was the Willie Lynch plan of action. And since we got stuck into that plan, they're using all these other plans to also destroy our communities, and we cannot break free. But this is the sad part. We feel that we can't break free, but we really can break free, but it's not going to take that so-called black leader. It's not going to take that so-called messiah. It's not going to take our first black president, President Obama. It's going to take each one of us as individuals in our community to recapture what we've earned in this country. This is your man, Dwayne Abernathy. I'm taking a break, and I'll be back in a second. You listen to Moving Forward here on YizerRadio.com.
I like to introduce myself. My name is.
Didn't have to pay her. She didn't run away, I think her. must be crazy. On the phone saying I love her, but in the bathroom there's another. Hoping I'll stay undiscovered, like I'm undercover brother. Hurry, acting like I just met her. Did you wrong forever? You with the facts that could've loved you better. Yeah, someone's out here living reckless. Girls in order like a checklist. Kept a Cuban up for breakfast, but none lived up to her complexion. My appetite was so insatiable. By questions and answers, got my studies taking chances, but the teens in the amber kept on coming back like cancer. So she chose to use a common sense.
Hello, this is Dwayne Abernathy with 14 Generation Technical Services. In today's world, businesses need a video surveillance camera system. Some of the benefits of installing a camera system are they will improve safety, reduce shrinkage, reduce accidents, increase your bottom line, raise staff accountability, and give your customers a sense of peace. Here at 14 Generations, we specialize in new state-of-the-art technology cloud surveillance systems for restaurants, retail, lodging, offices, and we specialize in daycare centers. In addition to sales, we offer service, maintenance, training, and installation of these customized video surveillance systems. If you would like more information, please contact us at 888-751-8881. Once again, that's 888-751-8881, or log on to 14generations.com. That's the number 14 in the word generations. So once again, that's 14generations.com.
This show is sponsored by damselindistress.com. If you're in Atlanta, Georgia, or Indianapolis, Indiana, and need home or business services like junk hauling, moving, carpet cleaning, residential or commercial cleaning, electrical, painting, drywall, or a handyman to complete your to-do list, then let damselindistress.com be your helping hands. Call 1-888-769-2210 or log on to damselindistress.com and use promo code YISER to receive a 5% discount on your services. That's 1-888-769-2210 or log on to damselindistress.com and use promo code YISER to receive a 5% discount on your services.
What's up, what's up, what's up? It's your man, Dwayne Abernathy. You're listening to Moving Forward here on YISERRadio.com. Gentrification. Okay, let me get back on Spike Lee for a second. So Spike Lee, he's been on TV lately having a fit about gentrification. Now, question for Spike. This is one thing that we do as black people. We can act like we're power to the people all we want. And I've even made this mistake before in my life. We get a little piece of money. We get a little piece of success. And the first thing we do, we relocate. Now, mind you, Spike, if he has such a big problem with gentrification, he has enough money, and him and his buddies had enough money, where they could have went into any neighborhood in Brooklyn or any neighborhood in the country, like a lot of white people do, and buy up a whole block, a whole city block. This is what I'm talking about, getting back to us owning our own stuff. Then, once they own their city block, guess what? They can dictate how the school is in that area. And then after they dictate how that school is in that area, guess what? They can also control the local government, the politicians in that area. And this is what gets me. For it to sound so simple, why is it that rich, we're going to talk about the rich black people for a second. Why don't rich black people do that, but white rich people, white people who got the money, they got figured out and they could do it. They're not doing no different than what we're doing. Actually, we could have done it better because guess what? We were already there. And I know, and I'm not naive. I know it's a bigger conspiracy against us. I know we got to deal, fight against the federal government, deal with local government, and all this type of stuff. I mean, it's a big, big machine behind the gentrification thing. But hell, we're not even willing to lose what we have to fight against that big system. So that's my only biggest gripe about the whole Spike Lee argument. Because Spike's been in the game long enough, and Spike knows enough people in the game where they could have pulled their money and bought houses in the neighborhood. Spike didn't have to move to Manhattan. I think Spike has like a $34 million townhouse for sale right now. That's 34. You know what $34 million could have done in Bedford-Stuyvesant, Brooklyn, New York? You know, how much you could have done in off of Auburn Avenue in Atlanta? You know how many homes and land you could have bought? So it's one of those, what they call them, armchair revolutionaries. It's like Spike is like sitting back up in his ivory tower, you know, talking about oppression, this and that. But Spike's not out in the streets no more, man. He's not out in the streets no more, you know. And now, let's get back to the plan. There's always a plan. If you don't know what gentrification is, let me first tell you what the definition of it is first. And then once I tell you the definition, I'm going to expose to you guys the big plan, because I tell you all the time, there is a plan. So gentrification is the shift of an urban community towards wealthier residents and or businesses and increasing property values. Gentrification is typically the result of investments in a community by local government or corporate business groups, and can often attract national businesses moving out small local businesses and benefit corporate interests rather than neighborhood community work. Urban gentrification can lead to population migration, which may involve poor residents being displaced by wealthier people. Okay. When I read that definition, all I hear is the destruction that the civil rights movement did to us as black folks. Let me dissect this definition real quick. Gentrification is a shift of urban community towards wealthier residents or businesses increasing property value. I'm going to ask you guys something. That's just like the other day when I was talking about the death of, is her name Melody Holloway or whatever her name is, and the death of Trayvon Martin. Is her life more valuable than a young black man's life? Is a white person's life more valuable than a black person's life? So, right here it says increased property value. So I got a question for you. If a white person lives in your neighborhood, what makes you say, and you guys can have the same jobs, how in the world that their value, their property value is more valuable than if it's a black person living there? The reason why is because we have not put together an economic structure in our community like we should have done during the civil rights movement. Right here, gentrification is typically the result of investments in a community by local government. What did I say all the time? Our biggest downfall is we do not participate in what? Local government. They have trained our community to only focus on the general election to elect a president of the United States that can't do crap for us in our community. Now, that's what I'm talking about. This is why I get pissed off, for the simple fact that we have this education, we have these resources, but we're not using these resources. Like I tell you guys all the time, knowledge is not power. The use of knowledge is power. And you know what? When we have these big major black churches in every community across this country, why isn't this type of stuff being taught in our black churches? Because a lot of times in these neighborhoods, the black churches has the ear of the residents. So why aren't they teaching this stuff here? Why are they not teaching this stuff here? Because guess what? We wouldn't be going through this gentrification, and we wouldn't be having Spike Lee on the TV crying a victim if, guess what? If we won, would have had a real fight during the civil rights movement and had an economic structure for our community, and two, understand how we get played when it comes to politics, how we supposed to be involved in local government. This right here tells you how they play the game against us. It's almost like their playbook is right there wide and open for us, but we don't pay no attention to their playbook. Let's see what else. Often national small and local businesses. Guess what? Once after the civil rights movement, what did we stop doing? We stopped supporting our black businesses. Guess what? We dispersed our money outside of our community and start building these big corporations that are coming in now, shutting down the small mom and pop operations. You know, it wouldn't been for no Home Depots and Walmart, stuff like that, if the mom and pop stores were still being supported. Okay? Okay. Urban gentrification could lead to population migration, which may involve poor residents being displaced by wealthier people. Do you guys remember, I'm trying to remember one of my shows. It was one of those shows, what was it? I think it might have been my Black Power show, the last Black History show. And I was talking about having our own. What's wrong with us having our own? Remember when I talked about the whole thing, like when it came to real estate and having our own neighborhoods, how we was talking about, oh, there's discrimination against us or whatever when it comes to real estate because we want to move out to the suburbs with the white folks. They had white flight. They was out to the suburbs, and we always thinking, oh, it's a better place to live out of the suburbs, and we weren't getting the loans out there. They was telling us then, there's nothing wrong with having your own. But what do we do? What do we do? We stop valuing what we had, stop caring about our local neighborhoods. We totally ignore the fact that we should have been involved with local government, and we let our neighborhoods go down because we're too busy trying to move to the suburbs. By us not getting involved in our local governments, we let people who didn't even live in our communities dictate what was going on in our community, what was going on in our public schools in our community. But we had some educated leaders that was leading us through the civil rights movement. Why didn't they teach this part of it, though? This is my biggest argument. Why didn't they teach this part? Now, and I know there's some people listening to me right now talking about, Dwayne, it's bigger than that. It's deeper than that. I know this. I know that there is a bigger plan. But at the same time, we have played a role in their plan like we always do. And this is what we have to stop doing. So I'm going to play to you right now, for you right now, a clip of what the plan was for gentrification.
The Bed-Stuy brownstones you see in Spike Lee movies were built around the turn of the century to house white people, who at the time constituted the vast majority of the northern urban population. In 1934, amid the lower depths of the Great Depression, lots of people were in need of housing, but banks weren't underwriting lots of mortgages. The banks assessed, wisely, that potential borrowers were not likely soon to develop the earning power sufficient to pay their loans back. So as part of the New Deal, the Congress passed the National Housing Act, establishing the Federal Housing Administration, or FHA, which provided insurance to mortgage lenders. If banks would lend mortgages, the government would guarantee them. Sounds like a boondoggle for the banks, but thanks to some good policy, the FHA wouldn't issue just any loan. Underwriters had to issue mortgages that lived up to the FHA's standards. But thanks to some bad policy, some of those standards carried distinctly offensive implications. Okay, hold that thought for a moment, because to understand those implications requires addressing one of the greatest historical movements of peoples in our continent's history. The second wave of what is called the Great Migration saw over 5 million black Americans abandon the Jim Crow South for the major industrial cities of the North and West from 1941 to the 1970s. Detroit, a representative example, went from over 90% white in 1940 to 30% black just 20 years later. Most current black residents of cities outside the South are the descendants of participants in the Great Migration.
This poem is called One Way Ticket.
You're listening to the voice of Langston Hughes, reading a poem of his from 1949.
I pick up my life and take it with me, and I put it down in Chicago, Detroit, Buffalo, Scranton, Harlem, any place that is north and east and not Dixie. I pick up my life and take it on the train to Los Angeles, Bakersfield, Seattle, Oakland, Salt Lake, any place that is north and west and not south. I am fed up with Jim Crow laws, people who are cruel and afraid, who lynch and run, who are scared of me and me of them. I pick up my life and take it away on a one-way ticket, gone up north, gone out west, gone.
There goes the neighborhood was the ubiquitous refrain of northern whites in the cities receiving the influx of southern blacks. White people in the north did not approach integration with arms much more widely open than those of their southern counterparts. Malcolm X called this up south.
Well, they were busting heads out in Brooklyn. They were busting heads out in Long Island. They were busting heads up in the Bronx. White teenagers came out in sheets. Ku Klux Klan, not in Georgia, but right up there in, not down south, but down in the Bronx.
When they couldn't stop the Great Migration by means of intimidation and violence, white people picked up and left in another, or perhaps the same, historical movement of peoples, this known as white flight. GI loans, the expansion of commuter rail, and the construction by the Eisenhower administration of the federal highway system made commuting easy. If you were, say, a Madison Avenue ad man like Don Draper, it was just as easy to live in a large house in Ossining, New York, as in a Bedford-Stuyvesant brownstone. Also facilitating white flight were the FHA's offensive lending standards I mentioned earlier, that thought that you were holding. These favored mortgages in areas on the outskirts of major metropolitan areas, subsequently known as suburbs, rather than in what consequently came to be called the inner city. These new suburban residential developments were often racially exclusive, in part because racial exclusivity earned extra points with the FHA. In other words, the federal government was more likely to guarantee home mortgages when they were in racially exclusive areas.
Then we have the category of what the association calls special community problems.
Yes, now, what are some of those?
Will you be quiet and let the gentleman talk?
Well, I'm sure that you people must be aware of some of the incidents that have happened in various parts of the city when colored people have moved into certain areas.
In this scene from the 1961 film version of Lorraine Hansberry's A Raisin in the Sun, Mr. Carl Lindner is attempting to maintain the white homogeneity of Clyburn Park outside of Chicago.
Believe me, I want you to believe me when I tell you that race prejudice simply doesn't enter into it. Wait, now it's a matter of the people of Clyburn Park believing now rightly or wrongly as I say that for the happiness of all concerned, that our Negro families are happier when they live in their own communities.
The Federal Home Loan Bank Board produced residential security maps with different color-coded zones, designated types A through D. Type A areas, outlined in blue, included the racially segregated suburban communities, like Mr. Lindner's Clyburn Park. Type D areas, outlined in red, were abandoned not only by mortgage lenders, but providers of financial services altogether. Withholding capital from certain areas is therefore known as redlining. Bedford-Stuyvesant was a deeply redlined neighborhood, and when all the white middle-class people living there took off, and all the industry shut down, and especially when crack was introduced into America's ghettos, Bedford-Stuyvesant became a picture of what is known as urban decay.
What's up? It's your man, Dwayne Abernathy. You're listening to Moving Forward here on GeyserRadio.com. That's the plan. That was the plan. And it's the plan then, and it's the plan now. Well-orchestrated plan. Damn good plan. Willie Lynch will be proud of the creators of this plan. Now, check this out. The plan. Now, we might could not have back in 1934 debunked the plan. But I'm still trying to figure out why in the hell in 2014 are we not debunking the plan, especially when we have brothers like the Spike Lees of the world. The Jay-Z's and Beyonce's of the world. Why aren't we debunking the plans when we have African-American working class families right now who average at least $60,000 a year income? Because this is what we do, and we're still doing this. And I'm talking to my upper income, higher income people like the Spike Lees of the world. And I'm also talking to my brothers and sisters out there who make anywhere from $60,000 to $150,000 a year income. We're still chasing after white folks in their white flight. We're like that oil spill. Imagine a car driving down the street and it's heading out and it's leaking oil. And it got these little specks and drops of oil falling behind the car that's dropping. Guess what those little black specks are? That's us. That's the black families who move out to the suburbs to think that if they live by the white people, you're going to have a better life. Because there's enough money that's being made in our communities where we can once again have our own. That's why I fight every week to let you guys know it's not too late for us. And I'm not going to sit up here and act like I'm the person in the glass house throwing the rocks, because I've done the same thing. I have moved my family out to the suburbs before. I've done that myself before. And then once I realized what I did, I refused to do that again. And there's a lot of factors that go into this plan. One, the bank mortgage discrimination. It was prevalent back then. But once again, it goes back to what I'm saying with the civil rights movement and have an economic plan. The black churches had the ear of the community. We were working. We were working because this, you people don't understand something. See, there's this false vision that people had that all white folks have money. All white people don't have money. It's just a small percentage of white people who have money. There are more white people on welfare and live in trailer parks than black people who lived in projects and who's on welfare. Okay, so let's debunk that myth right there, right off the bat. But back in those days, I would say the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, all through the civil rights movement, we needed to have some type of economic structure developed to continue to support our black businesses. And at the same time, guess what? That's why you go back to having your own. Think about this. You got to go to a white bank owner to ask him to give you some money to buy your house. But there was enough black money in our communities where we could have created our own banks. You got to understand something. Our government does not turn down money. Do you think in our black communities, with all our powerful black churches in our community, and we came up with $100 million, do you think that any Federal Reserve Bank, FDIC, any of these mortgage companies who back these white loans would have turned down our money? But we bought into their plan to think that the only way that our money has value is we take our money out of our hand and put it into the white banker's hands. And this is not about race. So I don't want anybody out there saying that I'm out here race baiting or hate speech or hating white people. No, I'm talking about waking up my people, because we need to be just as strong as any other community in this country. And we have to have pride in our community. And it's not too late for us, man. But we got to quit getting out there acting like the victims. We got to stop out there, you know, and Spike's wrong for what he did. Spike know better than that. Spike knows better than that. And any black person out there who's crying the blues about gentrification and your ass live out in the suburbs somewhere, you need to shut the hell up. because at that point you're being a armchair revolutionary. I'm taking a break. When I get back, I'm going to get more into this plan of gentrification. This is your man, Dwayne Abernathy. You're listening to Moving Forward here on YaiserRadio.com.
Good morning, TF. Good morning, this morning. This morning is the finest morning. It's no other morning. It's this morning. It's tomorrow morning. It's finest this morning. It's tomorrow morning. The finest morning. It's no other morning. It's this morning. Good morning, TF.
I went downtown.
Hello, this is Dwayne Abernathy with 14 Generation Technical Services. In today's world, businesses need a video surveillance camera system. Some of the benefits of installing a camera system are they will improve safety, reduce shrinkage, reduce accidents, increase your bottom line, raise staff accountability, and give your customers a sense of peace. Here at 14 Generations, we specialize in new state-of-the-art technology cloud surveillance systems for restaurants, retail, lodging, offices, and we specialize in daycare centers. In addition to sales, we offer service, maintenance, training, and installation of these customized video surveillance systems. If you would like more information, please contact us at 888-751-8881. Once again, that's 888-751-8881, or log on to 14generations.com. That's the number 14 in the word generations. So once again, that's 14generations.com.
This show is sponsored by DamselInDistress.com. If you're in Atlanta, Georgia, or Indianapolis, Indiana, and need home or business services like junk hauling, moving, carpet cleaning, residential or commercial cleaning, electrical, painting, drywall, or a handyman to complete your to-do list, then let DamselInDistress.com be your helping hands. Call 1-888-769-2210 or log on to damselindistress.com and use promo code YISER to receive a 5% discount on your services. That's 1-888-769-2210 or log on to damselindistress.com and use promo code YISER to receive a 5% discount on your services.
About the chip?
Tell them not to worry about the interest rate. The interest rate hasn't moved 2% in 5 years.
Okay.
Talk to you later. So, how you guys think you did on the test?
Alright, I guess.
Yes. Most of those tests are culturally biased to begin with. The only part that's universal is the math. You boys must be hungry. I'm real surprised to see you down here.
Came to see you. See how you doing. How's business going?
Well, there's always business. It's just not always in here.
So, like, what do you do, Furious? I mean, like, you help people get money for their homes or what?
Well, there is no or what. That's what I do, Rick. You You boys want to see something?
Do we have a choice?
No.
Wake your punk ass up. Get this gang back in the motherfucking house. Kicking a straight gang and shit for the 9-1, you know what I'm saying? Growing up in that school, we were 1984.
Afraid of our own people anymore, man.
Did you two knuckleheads come on?
Why don't y'all take a look at that sign up there? See what it says? Cash for your home? You know what that is?
Look up for
what are y'all, Amos and Andy? You step in and he's fetches? I'm talking about the message, what it stands for. It's called gentrification. It's what happens when the property value of a certain area is brought down. Huh? You listening?
Yeah.
To bring the property value down. They can buy the land at a lower price. Then they move all the people out, raise the property value, and sell it at a profit. Now what we need to do is we need to keep everything in our neighborhood, everything, black. Black owned with black money. Just like the Jews, the Italians, the Mexicans, and the Koreans do.
Ain't nobody from outside bringing down the property value. It's these folks shooting each other and selling that crack rock and shit.
Well, how you think the crack rock gets into the country? We don't own any planes. We don't own no ships. But we are not the people who are flying and floating that shit in here. I know every time you turn on the TV, that's what you see, black people.
Yeah.
Selling the rock,
right.
Pushing the rock,
yeah.
Pushing the rock. Yeah, I know. But that wasn't a problem as long as it was here. Wasn't a problem until it was in Iowa and it showed up on Wall Street where there are hardly any black people. Now, if you want to talk about guns, why is it that there's a gun shop on almost every corner in this community?
Why?
I'll tell you why. For the same reason that there's a liquor store on almost every corner in the black community. Why? They want us to kill ourselves. You go out to Beverly Hills, you don't see that shit. But they want us to kill ourselves. Yeah, the best way you can destroy a people, you take away their ability to reproduce themselves.
Yeah.
Who is it that's dying out here on these streets every night? Y'all.
Yeah.
Young brothers like yourselves.
What am I supposed to do? Fool roll up, try to smoke me? You shoot the motherfucker if he don't kill me first.
You're doing exactly what they want you to do. You have to think, young brother, about your future. Huh?
Think, my brothers and sisters. Boys in the Hood. 1991. I'm going to show you guys something. The messages have been there in our community. The messages have been there in our community. The education has been there in our community. I have played clips that were made by people who outside our community who brought light to these messages that's been in our community. But there is such a big majority of our house Negroes in our community and members of our community who have definitely been brainwashed by the Willie Lynch plan of action that we don't see or hear these messages. The first clip I played, first part of the plan, Malcolm X had mentioned back in the 60s what was going on, but we weren't here. We was too busy trying to eat hamburgers in their establishments. We was too busy trying to stay at their hotels. 1989, Spike Lee mentioned gentrification and do the right thing. And the message was never carried forward. Majority of people who seen Do the Right Thing, most of them can only remember or talk about Radio Raheem. But the message was there, but the message was not pushed and moved forward. Then we go to 1991, Boys in the Hood. The message was there, but the message was not moved forward. These are perfect examples of knowledge is not power. The use of knowledge is power. People think about Boys in the Hood, only thing they think about is Ice Cube's first movie or Lil Ricky getting shot in the back. That's why there's no excuse. That's why there's no excuse. Then also in that first clip that I played, talking about the plan, in that plan, that guy said then crack rock was introduced to the black community. Introduced to the black community. Why? So they can continue on with the plan to bring down the value of the areas. The first thing was the banks. First banks were like, look, we're not giving out no loans for no remodeling. We're not giving out no loans to, you know, for businesses in the area. It's not going to happen. The next thing, the drugs came in. But you know what the first thing was? The most damaging thing of it all was before? Here we go. I'm going in. I'm about to piss y'all off. Desegregation. The segregation was so destructive to our community, and that's the reason why we're on TV. One of the reasons why we're on the news and on TV right now crying about gentrification. We've always worked. We have worked since we've been in this corrupt-ass country. We have worked. But for some reason, we bought into that whole notion that what we have has no value. That green is that grass is green on the other side, and I always tell people all the time, the grass would never be greener if you don't nurture the grass that you have. I'm going to give you guys an example. Let's talk about income in African American. And this tonight's show is not talking about being equal pay with white people or other communities. I'm just talking about the fact that we did make money. In 1970, 28%, almost 29% of African Americans made under $15,000 a year. The annual household income in 1970. Okay? In 1970, 33% of African Americans was making $15,000. Now we're talking about household families now. $15,000 to $35,000 a year. Okay? 1970, we had African Americans 35.8% making $35,000 to $100,000 a year. Those are all upper mobile numbers there. The '70s. And you know what we did with all that damn money? We ran out to the suburbs with that money. We ran out to Neiman Marcus with that money. We ran and stayed at the Hyatt Regency with that money. We didn't go to historically black colleges. We went to Georgia Tech, IU, Purdue with that money. Oh, I left out. Oh, we also had a 2.2% back in 1970 and made 200K or above. There's our money right there. Okay, let me move forward here. 34.6% in 1980 made 35 to 100,000. That's what I don't get. That's why we should never allow them to call our neighborhoods the hood. or let our neighborhoods become the hood. But we got distracted. And that's why I can't blame my parents. But who I can blame is my people who are my age and within 10 years of my age. Because in 2011, we had 27% of African American families, 15K to 35K. 37% made 37% to 100,000. I mean, I'm sorry, 37% made 35K to 100,000. We had 9% that made 100,000 to 200,000. And we had 1.6% that made 200,000 or more. We're working. We're making money. But our money's dispersed. We got money out in Gwinnett County. And if you're in Atlanta, we got money out in Smyrna, Alpharetta, Union City. We got all our money all over the city. If you're in Indianapolis, Indiana, we got money out in Lawrence, Warrens Township, Pike Township. Our money's dispersed. But in the other communities, they take their money and they pull their money and they build their communities. So guess what? Our money really doesn't have that same amount of value because we go out to these communities where we're outnumbered by these people. So when we pull our money together, that's when we're able to control things like gentrification. Because you got to understand something. Black folks don't go into white neighborhoods and take over white neighborhoods, and we change the name of their neighborhoods. We change the culture of their neighborhoods. Now, that's the only part of the Spike Lee argument that I did agree with when he said, how are you going to come up in Harlem and change names and change the culture of Harlem? How is that possible? You know, how here in Atlanta, how you going to have, you know, people outside the community move into, you know, the West End and change the culture and change the history of the West End? Why? Because they can. Because they pull their money together and they own in their community. We have no power when we disperse and we have our money all over the place. And that's why a lot of times we become the victim, or at least cry the victim. I'm going to give you a perfect example. I made this mistake when I first moved to Atlanta, right? Back in 2002, I believe, I had a house built in Atlanta from the ground up. Slab the whole 9 yards, right? First mistake, the house didn't have a homeowners association. Second mistake, I didn't have my take the time to educate myself to the level of understanding what was going on with gentrification. And so what ended up happening, remember I told you guys that Atlanta closed all their public housing and turned all the public housing and sold it to private investors? Well, they dispersed all those people who were in those public housing and gave them vouchers to move into neighborhoods like mine who didn't have, guess what, homeowners associations to what? Control my community. So, and I don't have nothing against any of these people, but what happened is when those people start moving out to our communities, their neighborhood changed. The tax breaks changed. The schools changed. The value of my house changed. Okay? And the reason why that happened, because I wasn't educated. My neighbors weren't educated. But now, you have to make sure that it doesn't happen again to us. So that's my argument. We have to make sure that it doesn't happen again. And I'm going to give you an example. I'm going to play a clip right now to give you an example of what happens, because it all comes down to education in the school systems, in the community.
hard to think about. Without an education, you could only be a tramp. Go guy shoes, no haircut, just plain old country.
Politicians on both sides of the aisle almost unanimously agree that the key to curing poverty and the rest of the associated phenomena constituting the so-called urban crisis is education. It makes a certain amount of intuitive sense. After all, the people with the best educations tend to get the best jobs with the best salaries, and the people with the worst educations tend to get the worst jobs with the worst salaries. But really, this begs the question. That is, as much as good education can create wealth, wealth can secure good education. As much as terrible education can perpetuate poverty, poverty begets terrible education. The picture promulgated by mainstream politicians is complicated by this self-reinforcing mechanism. In the wake of the 1954 Brown versus the Board of Education Supreme Court decision, a lot of thought went into how to integrate schools, but given the pervasive segregationist districting and white flight, community activists were inclined to give up on the project of racial integration by the late 60s and early 70s to focus instead on community control of schools. Here is Chicago's Michael Evans, the youngest member of the family on Good Times, making the case. Notice that James, Michael's father, indicates that he was part of the Great Migration.
You know, son, you got a lot of smarts. It'd be a shame to waste that God-given talent in a bad school.
If God gave me talent, it was meant to be used in my own neighborhood with my own people.
Don't be so sure. Maybe God wanted you to be bust.
Yeah, that's easy for him to say, because his son was never bust. Busing is just a way of buying us off.
It's a step, son. Busing is a beginning.
Michael, aren't you always told me that one day you want to be on the Supreme Court?
That's right.
Well, here's your big chance, man. You make it to the Supreme Court, you can get them laws changed and make it good for everybody. But I got news for you, my man. The Supreme Court don't hold no sessions in the ghetto.
How come you so much for busing? You were never
bust. Yes, I was, too.
You were?
Yeah, when I was a kid in Mississippi, I was bust by foot. I had three beautiful white schools to one crummy black one.
You see, Michael, there are lots of children out there who are dying for the chance that you've got.
Any kid wants to ride to Rogers Park, they can have my seat.
You can yell. But it means better schooling you're going.
I don't want to go to that school. I'm never going to sit on that bus.
Michael.
Oh, both of y'all right. Michael's going to be on that bus, but he ain't going to be settled.
Brownsville, right next door to Bed-Stuy, had gone from about 5% black in 1940 to about 95% black and Puerto Rican in 1967, when the New York City Board of Education established the Ocean Hill-Brownsville Decentralized School District to experiment with community control. In May of 1968, the tensions within the project bubbled over, and the Ocean Hill-Brownsville Governing Board fired a group of white, mostly Jewish, teachers, which precipitated a citywide teacher strike and intense acrimony. My mother, just out of college, her older brother, and their parents were all New York City teachers at the time. My mother was teaching second grade in the Ocean Hill-Brownsville School District and supported community control. My uncle went to teach at one of the freedom schools established in the ghetto so that kids could still learn while the strike was ongoing. My grandparents were union devotees who picketed and marched and basically stopped talking to their kids around this time. Thanksgiving of 1968 ended in a shouting match, after which it was years before a family detente set in. From the outset, though, the whole problem of school integration is intimately connected with the movement of mortgage capital I've been talking about. It works like this. Property taxes fund schools. Good schools increase property values, and lousy schools lower them. This sets up a two-way ratchet out from equality, whereby the well-to-do are pressured to move to more expensive neighborhoods lest their kids wind up at inferior schools, and the inferior schools become increasingly inferior because of the deteriorating value of the properties around them as wealth flees to areas with better schools. There were elements of this quandary in the gas that inflated the housing bubble. On the one hand, greatly unequal school districts pushed middle-income people into unaffordable housing, and on the other hand, historically redlined communities whose chief disadvantage for decades was lack of access to financial services were suddenly flooded with them in the form of predatory subprime mortgage loans.
We fought to get more credit in our neighborhoods, and the banks fought us and fought us until we forced different underwriting standards. But by then they said, click, aha, there's gold in them there, poor Black Hills.
What's up? This is your man, Dwayne Everett. You're listening to Moving Forward here on GeyserRadio.com. Education. Lack of education. I played that clip to show the whole purpose of the mission. Schools are controlled. Neighborhoods are controlled by the schools. That's why a lot of people say, oh, I'm moving out to this neighborhood because of the school district's better. But this is the trick, how they play this. And it's so funny, that message in Good Times proved how they trick us. I found out, I would say, about 5 years ago, because I was a product of being shipped out to, you know, those so-called township schools. I got shipped out to a township called Warren Township in Indianapolis, Indiana. It was a suburb of Indianapolis. I found out that the school district was getting paid $750 per semester per Black child who was being shipped out to that township. $750 times 2. That's $1,500 per child. I would say for instance, there could have been maybe 500 of us going out to that school. That's $75,000 that went into that community. We were outsourced. So Black youth decided they would accept those Black kids in because of what money. And then when you hear bull crap like that Good Times episode, when you got the brainwashed Black parents telling them, go out there, it's a better school, but not knowing the truth because they weren't participating in local government, not knowing. You know what? I'm going to take a break. I'm having technical difficulties because I got to get this point across. I'm going to take a break and I'll be back in a second. What's up, it's your man, Dwayne Everett at the other back. Okay, back to what I was saying. $75,000 was going outside of our community. And this is what I'm talking about, participating in the local government. And this is what I'm talking about, how our Black community has to get involved. Okay? Because that $75,000, guess what, goes into the damn school that's in our neighborhood. But we were too busy looking at, thinking that the white man's water is colder. We got caught up in the whole Willie Lynch plan of action. That $75,000 went out of our local public schools and went out to the township schools. Their education wasn't no better than we could have got our public schools, because what are they doing now? With this so-called gentrification, they're moving back into those same neighborhoods, going to those schools that weren't any good and getting rid of everybody in those schools and hiring their own teachers. Do you guys see now why I'm so hard on the civil rights movement? It jacked us up. It jacked us up. And everybody all can say, oh, Dwayne, it's the government, boo-hoo, blah, blah, blah. But guess what? The government only can do fight against you if you allow them to. They can hold you down and only they allow you to, because what? We're too busy not trying to get educated. We're not listening to brothers like Brother Malcolm back in the day. We're not listening to, before Spike Lee did what he's doing today, listen to the Spike Lees of the world or the educators of the world. No. We're too busy living the so-called American white dream. And once again, I'm not talking about being racist or nothing. I'm talking about being a simple fact of having pride in your community. Because I'm going to tell you, this is what they think of us. This is what they think of us. This is what they say in those neighborhoods around the country right now. This is what they say about us.
Chef Justin Warner whips a wasabi marshmallow drizzle, a lean pork roast stews in duck confit. This isn't a typical meal in Bed-Stuy.
We imagine that we couldn't be possibly the only people that were dissatisfied with crumb fried chicken and bodega food, you know? Some people just want, like, you know, a filet, you know? And it can be a special occasion. It can be an everyday thing for you. It doesn't really matter, you know? But at that time, there was really no place to go for that sort of thing where it's like, you know, food.
Warner and his partners opened Do or Dine nearly 5 months ago. The veterans of the restaurant business wanted a place to eat where they lived. They've created a menu to appeal to the more sophisticated diners in the area.
Delicious as the food here at Do or Dine is, I can't help feeling at least slightly unsettled as I savor it, because I grew up in New York City in the 1990s, when a restaurant at this address would have borne no similarity to this one's culinary bent, price point, customer base, and decor. I even suspect the Bedford Stuyvesant that existed then would have a difficult time recognizing this establishment's right to appropriate the neighborhood's unofficial motto, Bed-Stuy, Do or Die. That neighborhood was memorably described by hometown hero, the Notorious B.I.G., this way.
Talk slick to get your neck slick quick, cause real street niggas ain't having that shit. Talk sex for rap, smoking blunts in the project hallway, shooting dice all day, waiting for niggas to step up on some fighting shit. We get hype and shit and start fighting shit, so step away with your fist fight ways, motherfucker, this ain't back in the day, but you don't hear me though.
Businesses like Do or Dine have arisen in part as contributions to an attempt to discard the neighborhood's erstwhile reputation. Brooklyn's most famous inner-city neighborhood is trying to put its Bed-Stuy, Do or Die days behind it, reported the Daily News in 2005, with a marketing makeover and a less street-tough slogan. Bed-Stuy and Proud of It will be the motto of a public relations campaign that kicks off today, the report continued. It's aimed at shedding Bedford-Stuyvesant's image as a crime-ridden neighborhood and remaking it as a proud, historic, and desirable place to live, shop, and do business. Those undertaking such a remaking project might want to stretch, lest they pull a muscle reaching far back enough through history to touch the days before the neighborhood was crime-ridden, and may discover in the process that Bedford Stuyvesant's legacy involves quite a bit more than a shopping district fallen to ill repute. It's a saga involving mortgage capital, historical movements of peoples, and the intersections between race, class, and education.
The plan. This is what they think about us. This is what they're saying about us. It's like Christopher Columbus saying he discovered America and there were some people already here. Did you hear that clip? They saying stuff like, oh, this particular restaurant decided they want to come in and start having a more sophisticated menu. Let's get rid of the crime-ridden neighborhood. But you know what? I'm not mad at white people. Because this is the part where I'm talking about us, that I'm mad about us, like eating the slave food. The dude came out of his mouth and said the exact same thing I said the other day about Royal Crown Chicken or whatever. There's a chicken shack on this corner. There's a chicken shack on that corner. There's this chicken shack. The reason why there's chicken shacks on all the corners in our neighborhoods, because we allowed this crap to happen. These people are moving into our neighborhoods, and it's like, you know what? We own this now. We're going to show y'all how to do this. The reason why? That's why I'm trying to wake my people up. We have to get our own consciousness. These people came into our neighborhoods and like, yo, we're going to bring in a more sophisticated food. Because we live here, we don't want to eat this crap. We don't want to eat bodega food. We don't want to eat bodega food. Don't you know I can go into a damn BP gas station? There's a freaking place in there called Chester's Freaking Chicken in the gas station. Who the hell eats some Chester chicken from a damn BP gas station? My people. And this is what they're saying about us. This is what they think about us. No, this is what we think about ourselves because we have decided to live this way. We have decided to not, what I keep telling you guys, education. We choose not to educate ourselves. We forever chasing after what they're doing, chasing after their dream, and killing our own dreams. So, next time you're down in the chicken shack tomorrow, and get some of that fried rice, ask yourself, are you a slave? Ask yourself if you're a slave. Then I'm going to play this clip, a clip that hurts me to the heart, because there's this guy who went out into our community and was asking people in our community, do you know what gentrification is? Do you know what gentrification is? We're in the middle of a war, and we're dying in this war, and we don't even get it. We don't even get it.
I'll tell you what gentrification means. A lot of people talk about the word, they throw it around a lot, but no one really actually delves into it to see what this term means, because in Highland Park, Echo Park, Silver Lake, it's a term that's being used a lot. So today we're going to find out what gentrification means to people, what it means to locals, and what it means to people actually doing the gentrifying. So follow us, follow me and my buddy Mike, and we're going to take you in a little scoop. Bada bing. The big word people are throwing around is gentrification, and we just want to see, as you know, someone here working in the community, do you know what even that term means, gentrification?
Well, I guess being a gentleman, I guess.
I don't know. Yeah.
I don't really care what it means.
Sure.
To be a gentleman?
There you go.
To be a gentleman.
Be a gentleman.
To what?
Gentrification.
I don't even know. No, I don't.
No, you ever never heard that word?
No.
To you, what does it mean?
I don't even know what it means.
Like, just give me an idea. Like,
I don't even know what it is.
Oh, at all?
No.
All right. Well, have a good day, sir.
Yeah, no problem.
Gentrification?
Gentrification.
Gentrification? No, I have no, I never even heard of that.
What do you think it means?
It has something to do with being gay.
What do you think gentrification means? Because I don't know what it means. It
depends on what kind of stuff they're talking.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you for your time, sir.
Say it again.
Gentrification.
I've never heard of that.
What do you think it means?
I don't know. If you break it down, I don't know, something about the genders. Like,
breaking genders? Okay, what do you think?
A term to identify...
A term to identify cheese, gentlemen.
We're asking this question to everyone in this community. What does the term gentrification mean to you?
I have no idea.
Give me an idea. Give me a guess.
No, I have no idea.
Gentrification. It's happening here in Highland Park.
No,
it's happening in Echo Park.
No,
it's happening in Silver Lake.
It's all these people moving in.
Now, you're a resident. Is that something that you appreciate because, you know, maybe your home value is going to go up?
Oh, yeah.
Or is it something that you kind of frown upon?
No, the prices of my house is going up.
Yeah? So you appreciate that?
I appreciate that.
Well, we're showing something different here in Highland Park. We're a beacon of love to the world. And, you know, I don't know, gentrification, schmentrification. It's nice to see that things are sprucing up around town. Yeah, that's a beautiful thing for the community.
So disappointed to see that no one knew what gentrification meant. We were really bummed. My friend Mike practically drank himself to death. Finally, we ran across some people that seemed to know what they were talking about, or at least this one white dude did.
I think it means, like, a certain type of people move into a community, and it happens to be a community where stuff is, like, you know, the property values are cheap. And then those of us that feel weird about it, you know, that are here right now, it's like, man, what the hell do we do with this, you know, because it doesn't seem fair. But I believe if we embrace the community and the citizens in it, then gentrification doesn't necessarily have to be a threat, because if we're aware of who our neighbors are and we're thinking about them and we're, like, taking their life into consideration, then we're not going to stomp on them, you know, and make a big mess of things.
That's a really good point, you know, and I think a lot of people don't really understand. That's why we're doing a segment on this topic. A lot of people don't understand. You really kind of just broke it down for everyone, you know, what it really means. And I think when people do see, you know, other people taking their culture, their community into consideration, I think they like that. But
I believe it makes a healthy community.
Right.
It makes the healthiest community have all spectrums of our ecosystem, like all statuses represented. We just have to, like, be more comfortable with knowing who our neighbors are and figuring out their names, you know.
Yeah. So there you have it, folks. Gentrification. Not many people really know about it. Go ahead, ma'am. Are you familiar with the word gentrification?
No, I'm sorry.
See what I'm saying? No one knows what it means. Hey, woo, woo, woo. What's up, though? Bleep, 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 bleep.
What's up? This is your man, Dwayne Abernathy. I'm sorry, man. I just so disgusted when I heard that clip. I bet you can go down the damn street right now and ask somebody what the hell Nicki Minaj is doing, what Lil Wayne is doing. You don't have no curiosity and wonder why everybody in your neighborhood is being displaced. You don't have no curiosity to understand why the businesses in your community are closing. And this is the other part too. Getting back to the food thing. They sit there and bring in all these Chinese restaurants and all this. Everything is fried, dyed, and laid to the side in our community. And ain't nobody upset about it. Ain't nobody protesting about it. I mean, I had to go to find a decent meal. I had to go all the way out to the suburbs to find a decent place to eat. Like, black folks don't eat healthy. But we are too busy being outnumbered by the good time people of the world that we do not move our people forward. We are at war. And I'm not talking about no war where you're picking up guns and killing anybody. I'm talking about we are in war to survive, to have our piece of this country that we have built. Because they are clowning us. Anytime you get our black president to be on some damn bullcrap website like Laugh or Die with some damn, what's this, I don't know, the dude from, what's the name of that damn movie? What is the name of that movie? Hangover? I have things to be worried about than being on some damn skit with some dude from the Hangover movies. They clowning us. And if you're still a non-believer out there, listen to this.
Say, hi, Jimmy. What have you got there?
It's my suitcase. I just moved in.
That's nice. Jimmy just graduated from the U and moved into the big city. He just started out, so he doesn't have much money. But he needs to find a place to live. Could he live here? Nope.
You're right. I don't have enough dough to live here. But I want to live in a smart neighborhood with lots of coffee shops and no violence. What do I do?
Well, Jimmy, you can move into a minority, low-income neighborhood and gentrify it.
Gentr what?
Gentrification. It's the restoration of run-down urban areas by the middle class, resulting in displacement of poor minorities.
I'm sorry, what?
First, realize that gentrification does not happen overnight. It takes a risk-taker. It takes a person with determination and an entrepreneurial spirit. It takes a white person. Here, Jimmy, I'll show you how.
I'm not sure this is the right neighborhood. There's a lot of people of culture here.
Well, it might not be the right location, Jimmy. The first step is finding a neighborhood to gentrify. One must look for a neighborhood with low-rent housing, locally owned ethnic shops, and opportunities for cultural enlightenment.
But how will I know which one will work?
Step one, Jimmy, is finding a woman who seems to be living in the area. But not just any white woman, a white lesbian woman. They're like vultures to the dying, decaying neighborhoods that are just begging for gentrification. Found a place to live, Jimmy?
Yeah, I sure gentrified this apartment.
Not good enough, Jimmy. You need to bring in more affluent people. Attract people like us by demanding goods and services traditional Americans enjoy.
How?
Start demanding more from your local coffee shops. They'll have to adjust to the tastes of the new, whiter neighborhood.
Excuse me. I'll have a caramel macchiato, please.
Make sure all signs are spelled correctly in English. Stay away from food that you don't recognize. If it isn't American, it probably isn't worth eating. In order to attract more enlightened people, you need to start community events like book clubs, summer lacrosse leagues, and Ira Glass fan clubs. Next, start writing about your experience on an ironically titled blog. Make up a name for the neighborhood that can be considered romantic and appealing to upper middle class people. Hey, Jimmy, how's that art festival planning going?
Apple and Preston and I are really moving on this thing. Deer Hunter might play.
But how is your next door neighbor, the cab driver?
Oh, Anwar. You know, he's actually a really great guy. You know, I was talking to him the other day.
Yeah, okay. How's Anwar?
Oh, he had to move out because he couldn't pay the rent.
Don't be sad, Jimmy. He's moved to a place that he can afford. It's simple economics, supply and demand. The invisible hand at its best. Nothing you did wrong. It's just the natural forces that we should all accept as inevitable. Gee, this neighborhood sure looks brighter. It looks cleaner, safer, and more secure. The kind of place everyone would want to live. Not just lesbians. Everyone. All the people that matter. All the people that you want to talk to and get to know. Gentrification makes all this possible. It brings a self-respect and a spirit of goodwill towards the entire neighborhood. There is no downside. The rising tide of gentrification lifts all boats. Everyone benefits. Everyone wins. Everyone.
Mark it. Cut.
Sarah, let's get out of here. Come on.
Now are you a believer? If you're an African-American out there, you're listening to me right now, and you're sitting, I'm talking negative, I'm talking crap, I'm talking conspiracy theory. Are you now you a believer? And it's so crazy. That clip breaks down everything that I said. Food. Food is a big thing. Food is a big thing. The healthier that you eat, the clearer you think. The healthier your people are, the healthier your community is. Run them freakers out of your damn neighborhood. Feeding us that damn poison. And then, listen to what he said. It only takes one to move into a neighborhood and start changing the neighborhood. That's what I'm talking about, like the Spike Lees of the world. Spike up there in his ivory tower, complaining and griping, oh, they're taking over my neighborhood. Move your ass back in your neighborhood. Move your ass back in your neighborhood, Spike. They are not playing. They are laughing. They kicking up their feet. They running our businesses out. We already ran our business out, but the last little bit of black-owned businesses that's holding on to some little bit of hope, just a little bit of hope, now they got to go. Now they got to go because the big box stores are coming in. All this stuff goes back to what I'm saying. All this stuff goes back to the big plan. All this goes back, the weight is on our shoulders. I'm not blaming white people. I'm blaming us, man. I am not blaming white people. I'm blaming us. I'm not going to lie. I'm blaming our religious leaders. I'm blaming our black politicians. I mean, I'm doing all I can. I'm trying to be I'm a black business owner. I employ black people, and I'm not trying to be racist, you know. But I blame us, man. I blame us. Everybody else does it for their community. We have to take value in our communities, man. If you live over off of Gobby Road in Atlanta, don't sell your house. Let's fix up our communities. If you live in Brightwood in Indianapolis, Indiana, don't be trying to run your ass out to Pike Township or Lawrence. But first off, we got to fix our own, man. We got to fix our stuff from within. We got to police ourselves. They're not going to do it for us. They tell you they're not doing it for us. Hell, they making skits and clips joking, clowning us. We got to take the time to educate ourselves and our children. If you're a preacher out there, if you own a church, you got to stop with this old watered-down version of your religious teaching. You have to become an activist. You got to be willing to be able to be prepared to lose something. Damn that damn Bentley. Damn that big-ass house. Make sure your congregation is getting as strong as you are. Teach an economic plan within your religious organization. All of our teachers out there, I'm telling you, I am going to start a private tutoring school because our kids are not learning in these public schools. They don't give a damn about our kids. They're numbers. But then they displace our kids and send our asses out to the suburbs. That same public school your child is flunking in right now, they're going to be one of the highest rated schools in that city within the next 10 years. I am screaming, calling out to my people, we have to get this stuff together. We are a dying breed in our cities. We're going to become extinct in this country if we do not wake the hell up. I'm going to tell you two words that I hear a lot. I heard it a lot in that last clip that I played. He kept on saying stuff like enlightened, moving the enlightened people. Do things, enlightenment in the community. Have you ever noticed us African Americans who trying to reach our people, we use words like conscious? We're conscious. So that means there's a lot of us asleep. Consciousness is being awake. How can you get to being enlightened if you're not even conscious yet? White folks don't use words like consciousness. They say words like enlightened. And I'm not trying to be white. I'm just trying to tell y'all, if y'all want to play that game, we got to play that game just like we played basketball, took basketball over. Why can't we take over sports? Why can't we take over basketball, football? We can take over our cities, too. We can take over our cities, too.
Baseball, leather hats, you know, there's different guys that could wear different hats now.
After almost a century in business,
since 1921,
the Mad Hatter on Prospect Avenue in Cleveland will hang up their hat for good.
Citizen notice said we had to move out in 30 days, so September the 1st, I will be gone.
The Mad Hatter is one of three local businesses leaving the intersection of East 4th and Prospect, making way for Red the Steakhouse, a national chain.
You know, it saddened me because this is like the place I go. This is like the barbershop atmosphere.
The Mad Hatter is a mom and pop hat shop with decades and decades of memories, a staple on the street.
Hat just brings everything out. It's an identity. It's a culture. And that's what's so beautiful about coming down here.
It's so sad that we gotta go.
The in with the new and out with the old philosophy is a reality here along East 4th and Prospect, where business is blooming thanks to the casino down the street.
When Volk started, people used to come here in horses and horse and carriages.
Volk's Jewelry and Loans opened on Prospect before the turn of the 20th century.
We knew this was coming because the handwriting's on the wall. You could see what's happening in the area here, and the area is being developed in another direction.
Towards restaurants and entertainment, and away from independent pawnbrokers, jewelers, and hat shops.
We really don't know what's going to happen. If anybody has a loan with us, I'm going to tell them, please come down and get your jewelry back. That's important.
And while both shops futures are uncertain, what is certain is that Prospect is moving forward and changing, leaving remnants of an earlier era behind.
They're taking all the culture to me out, like the atmosphere, everything is a restaurant or something. It's too commercialized for me, you know?
In Cleveland, Melissa Reed, Fox 8 News.
Listen to what they said. Prospect is moving forward. Moving forward. I want to be able to live on this earth and see the day where I'm saying my people are moving forward. Moving forward. That's what it's all about. Moving forward. Standing your ground. We're just getting pushed around. Get your asses out. Go to where we tell you to go. The ones that are left over. First you black folks who wanted to be like us, y'all chased us out to the suburbs. Now we're going back into the city where you left the other people. I'm going to give you a perfect example. My mother lives in a house in a part of Indianapolis right now that's going through gentrification. Right? And my mother says she ain't going no damn where. And we are blessed enough where she can stay there because guess what? She can afford her taxes. Because they push those people out because they raise the taxes in the area for the people who own their houses. But guess what? Their kids are not in a position to help out those elderly in our community. And then, two, they don't even want to go back to the community because they're already out in the suburbs. So I got a question. Is there a positive side to this gentrification thing? There is another perspective, and this is the positive side. This is a positive perspective, and this brother does have a good point. But before I play this clip, this is the slave mentality that we have to break in the black community. This is the slave mentality of those ones that are left over in the community that they're getting rid of.
I feel like it's a big inconvenience for our people. We're here now because of the position we were put in, and you're going to move us out, and we make it even harder for us. We got jobs up here. We got kids, right? You know what I'm saying? It's already bad enough, and it's just making it a lot worse. I mean, I can see if they renovated this shit, you know, and kept us there and gave us something nice, something to have, you know what I'm saying? The reason why the shit is so bad is because we don't have shit. You know what I'm saying? When you look around, you see trash everywhere, you know what I'm saying? Ain't nobody gonna care about that. I mean, they gonna keep it. It's gonna stay hood. You look like hood, we gonna keep hood. You give us something nice, though. We have nice shit, you know what I'm saying? We take care of our shit. It's nice.
It's
not worth
it.
So it's gonna continue to stay that way. There's kids over there, you know? They go to school, everything. A lot of them don't even have transportation to get back and forth. You know what I'm saying? It's a convenient area.
That's a slave. Yeah, I'm about to piss somebody off. That's a freaking slave. That's what I'm talking about. This is our problem in our community. This is what we have to fix. Give us. We don't have shit. Yeah, I had to cuss because that's what he said. I'm shocking you now. Give us. Give us. Give us. What happened to do for self? Let's earn our way. Let's take our way. We don't have to earn nothing if we already have. Let's take our way back. This is that slave mentality. This is what the civil rights movement created. This is what the Democratic Party has created. Give us. Here's a positive perspective. There is a positive side. But once again, I don't 100% agree with this positive side, but this is a positive side. Got to show the other side of the coin. I only got 10 minutes left. That's why I'm throwing this clip in real quick.
Actor and director Spike Lee went off. That's a fair description. About the, quote, great influx of white people when he was asked this question by my next guest.
You mentioned gentrification with some slightly negative connotations, and I wondered if you've ever looked at it from the other side. Which is that if your family was still in that $40,000 home, it's now worth $3.5 or $4 million.
All right. Let me just kill you right now.
Okay. Go for it.
Because there was an article in the New York Times saying the good of gentrification. I don't believe that.
So D.K. Smith is the man who ignited that firestorm. There's a lot more back and forth. You're going to hear it. And he asked Spike Lee that controversial question. He's out front tonight. All right, D.K., so let me just start off with this. Look, you're asking a controversial question, but a really interesting point. Hey, if you stay in the neighborhood and other people move in, whatever their color may be, property values go up, all of a sudden your house is worth a lot of value. He just goes off. Were you shocked?
I was a little surprised by the, you know, magnitude of his going off, but I figured he would, you know, not be positive about that issue, that facet of the issue. I agree with all of his points. What I want to do is expand the dialogue. There is a positive side to it. So everything you said I'm in agreement with. I've experienced most of it. I've lived in Brooklyn and been black, born and raised there longer than he has. So I understand exactly what he was saying. Mm-hmm. But the positive side of it, this is the first time in America that blacks have been, open to that kind of wealth creation. I mean, you bought a house for $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. Now you get $3 million, $4 million, $5 million. That's a traditional route to, what being wealthy in America. We've never had that opportunity. And now many thousands, tens of thousands of us. Mm-hmm. In the last 4 years, I have to go to 2014 before we're now able to participate in that level of wealth creation. That's a positive thing. Let's talk about that, too. Let's expand the dialogue.
That's a pretty incredible statement. When you say you've experienced what he's talking about, have you experienced in your neighborhood where you grew up and you were black and now you felt discrimination? Because white people move in and all of a sudden they look at you like, what are you doing in this neighborhood? Well, are they afraid of you? Or?
I've had the people who let their dogs poop on my sidewalk and they're white. And when I speak to them and they kind of look at me strange and I'm like, are you kidding me?
What, like they don't think you live there?
Like they don't think anybody lives there. I mean, I've literally, some of my neighbors have tracked people home and tossed the feces on their steps. And when they look outraged, it's like, hey, you left that on my sidewalk. I thought you forgot it. So we've had those kinds of experiences. But let me counterbalance it. By and large, wonderful new neighbors. Very happy to have them. Great neighbors, great friends, participating in the community.
That's
so amazing. It's been mostly a positive experience. But certainly we've had the negative ones from the new ones. And they come in, they start telling us what to do as if we don't know. And that's just about, but it's about education. It's about educating them. It's not about backing off and complaining. You have to educate.
It's horrible here. It's incredible here. I'm glad you're sharing it because I think a lot of people would say, oh, well, that stuff can't happen now. Well, it can happen now.
Absolutely.
And it does happen now is what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, what I'm also curious about is, let's talk about Spike Lee. This is an interesting case in point, right? Guy is one of the most successful people in the country. He is worth an incredible amount of money. He's selling a townhouse, apparently, according to the papers, for $32 million. He could move into a really bad neighborhood and bring everybody's real estate values up in one fell swoop.
Spike is actually a causative factor. If he moved into a swamp, the prices would go up next door immediately. So, a bad movie is of his. How much does he make? A bad movie makes 40 or 50 million. So maybe he doesn't have the full perspective of a family that's worked for 30 or 40 years, paid taxes, taken care of their property, and now that 3, 4, or 5 million to them, that's a tremendous change.
Yeah.
He spoke about his grandmother putting him through Morehouse. Well, some of these families, when they move south or they downsize, what do they do with the money? Now they're able to take and put their grandchildren through college or through grad school. So the money doesn't evaporate and disappear, but we've never been able to do that.
And real estate has always been, in America, there's been bubbles and busts, but it has always been, for regular Americans, the only key to wealth creation.
One
it has always
pillars.
Been the only one.
A pillar to the wealth in America, and now we can participate on that level.
Solutions. 5 minutes ago. One, we need to take the time to educate ourselves on what's going on in our community. Two, we really have to be active in any type of community meetings, development meetings, anything in our areas. I'm telling you, there's a lot of neighborhoods now that's fighting against Walmart moving into their areas. Why? Because they're trying to protect the mom and pop businesses. That's what we need to do. We got to stop believing in the hype. Let's start believing in ourselves. Four, we have to become more active in the schools in our communities. Once we start controlling the schools in our communities, there's no reason to leave. The whole purpose of this whole thing is the education of our children. So if we're not demanding anything from the public school system, we're not going to get anything from the public school system. We're only going to get what they give us. Five, stop moving out to the suburbs. Stop chasing after white people. We have to start staying in our own communities. And number six, start snitching. We need to stop being cowards in our community and run their asses. If they selling dope, they got to go. If the sheriff not working, you got to go. If the city councilman not working, you got to go. We got to control our community and control our public, our local governments. It's your man, Dwayne Abernathy. I'm out. I hope that I touched somebody tonight with this gentrification. We got to stop being victims. And we have to move forward and do the things that it's going to take to protect our communities. Because they're here. They're not going anywhere. Go to any city in this country and you see them. They're there. But the question is, where are we? Where are we? Where do we move? Think about it. It's your man, Dwayne Abernathy. You listen to Moving Forward. Log on to Yizer.com. Tomorrow, I'm actually going to post a documentary on Yizer. It's called Gentrification Movie, The Atlanta Way. It's actually a documentary of gentrification here in Atlanta, Georgia. Check it out tomorrow. And also, Yizer is back up and working, so we will have new news on Yizer tomorrow. Thank you guys so much for your support. And like I tell you all the time, knowledge is not power. The use of knowledge is power. Peace, and I'm out.
What you say now? Tell me what you say, come again. If you cannot stay down, then you do not have to pretend like there is no way out. I should've never let you in, 'cause you got me face down. Don't take this personal. That you would come again. You said that we would remain friends, but you know that I do not depend on nothing or no one. So why would you show up uninvited? Just change my mind like that. Please don't take this personal. But you ain't true. You weren't special till I made so. You better act like you know that I've been through worse than you. He one night some. I never listened though. I should've figured though. All that shit you was spitting so unoriginal. But it was you, so I was with it. Man, to tell you the truth, wish we never did it. 'Cause I usually do stick to the business. But you came out the blue, and then you just flushed it. Baby, my mind's blown. Be forgetting you live in a different time zone. Think I know what this is, just the time's wrong. Yeah, I know what you did, but baby, I'm grown. Okay. And my love is patient and kind of. This is where we can build through different types of truth. You was really the realest, wouldn't be fighting it. I think your pride is just.
This show is sponsored by damselindistress.com. If you're in Atlanta, Georgia, or Indianapolis, Indiana, and need home or business services like junk hauling, moving, carpet cleaning, residential or commercial cleaning, electrical, painting, drywall, or a handyman to complete your to-do list, then let damselindistress.com be your helping hands. Call 1-888-769-2210 or log on to damselindistress.com and use promo code YIZER to receive a 5% discount on your services. That's 1-888-769-2210 or log on to damselindistress.com and use promo code YIZER to receive a 5% discount on your services.